Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am profoundly, deeply, wonderfully blessed by the fact that you are listening to this radio program as we look at worry. The one thing in my life I have been absolutely superior cum laude at, I am a worry wart. I always have been, even as a kid, and it goes way, way back. We'll talk about that in a little bit here, but everybody is worried about something right now, whether it be social justice or whether it be the virus. We have really hit the button, haven't we? The genetic DNA button, that the chromosome button, the hormone button. It is really something when you think about worrying. I remember being a little boy, laying in bed. I even remember where we were living in San Diego on Oakshire Court. And all of a sudden, from out of nowhere, this tremendous anxiety came over me. And it was, you know, the development of the body excreting all sorts of chemicals in my brain that caused me to worry. And when I, of course, being a little boy, how do you know all that? I worried about everything in that moment. It came to me. It was like a sudden, I didn't get depressed, but a sudden seriousness overtook me. Now, everybody has some sense of worry. And if you look up the word worry, it means give away to anxiety or unease. Allow one's mind to dwell on difficulty or troubles. That's how it's defined. And we all have our worries. All of us do. It's a mark of insecurity. And that's when deep insecurity started to overwhelm me, especially when you think about it in terms of it being a genetic process, which it was for me. And also, home life was not so great. So you had two parents that were not real pleased with each other. So the relationship a child has with themselves is generally the one that is reflected in the relationship the two parents are having with each other. So there was a lot to worry about in my day, in my childhood. But it never left me. And I want to say to this day that 99 and 9/10 of the things I've worried about over the course of my lifetime have been absolutely ridiculous, stupid, and never came into being. I just want you to know that. And the reason I say that is because there's a difference between the premonition of something that might happen or is happening and that of just plain worry. So I have three wonderful questions that were offered by three wonderful people who have been listening to my podcast and my offerings and my breath journal. There it is. And maybe any of this or some of this will help you. And I hope it does. First question comes from Carol. She does not tell me where she lives. Why do I worry about everything and social justice, especially now? Do you think that we'll ever come out of this? Carol. Carol, I'm not a soothsayer, so I don't know. I really don't know if we're ever going to come out of this. I think this has been fabulous. I think this has been really healthy. It doesn't look like it, I know. When you look at the virus and then you look at the social justice unrest that is going on all over the world, it really is quite a conglomeration of everything coming together in a single moment, a tipping moment, as it were, to find out who and what we truly are. And that's what we're dealing with right now. There are all sorts of logical things that could be said about human behavior. varies between person to person. It depends on the level of their depression, the level of their mental health, if there ever could be one. I don't believe in mental health personally. I don't think anyone who's mental is healthy. I don't know what will happen in the future, if we'll ever come out of this. But worrying about it isn't going to change anything. And if you want to truly change things, you and I have to change ourselves. We can't change other people. You cannot legislate or bring into being socially laws that make a person act responsibly towards another person. There's just no way to do it because people are going to do what they're going to do. And the argument is, you know, I live in a free country, blah, blah, blah. But again, we don't live in a free country. We don't live in a democracy. And all of a sudden, I think there are some people in this world who are beginning to understand that, who are beginning to see that and recognize it for what it is. That we have been putting our heads in the hole like an ostrich and not wanting to see what's going on, or feeling helpless and hapless in dealing with what's going on with racial tensions. And it's ridiculous. People are people. Everyone, whether you know it or not, is searching for love. And I must be the love I seek. That's just the way it has to be. As Gandhi said, you have to be the change in the world you want to see changed. And if you can do that, which any one of us can at any given moment, we can have a different kind of lifestyle and lifetime. It will change the way we operate within ourselves, within the dimension of love. So worrying about things, worrying about everything as you say you do, is just a sign. First of all, it's a chemical thing in you that you have initiated through biology, through genetics, and it isn't doing you any good at all. Now, just for me to say something like that is kind of stupid, because basically you know that. You know this isn't a pleasant experience, but it's more than that. It's finding peace within ourselves. Try to listen to me, Carol. Nothing ever gets resolved in this world. Jesus said it. There will always be wars and rumors of wars. In this world, there will always be. Why? Because we are the people we are. We live in a human body. We live from a human body. We live as a human body. We do not understand the nature of love, nor do we care to. We think love is emotion. There are many assumptions that we have come to that make us believe in certain aspects of ourselves that simply does not exist, only in our minds. So when you look at a human being, you are looking at a complicated complexity of biology that is acting and reacting and is vulnerable, is petulant, and at the same time can change in a heartbeat. It can go from good to really bad in a heartbeat, only because of the hormones that are kicking in, the chemistry that is going through our brain, and all of the things that constitute worry. You need to read Robert Sapolsky's book on Behave. You will understand why you and I behave the way we do, but it's a lot to get through. But just let me say this to you. The effort of meditation is to find a peace that is beyond the confines of the human brain. When a person does not take care of their mind, when they are susceptible to everything that the mind says, presents to them, the good, the bad, the right, the wrong, the mind works out of a very Paleolithic mentality. It's very cavemanish kind of thing. We have many different thoughts. We take them one at a time. We weigh them against each other. And then we find ourselves confused. And then we find ourselves in paradox. And that's really what's going on within you. The reason you're worrying so much is that one thought is pitted against another. When you are no longer interested in pitting one thought against another, when you are not trying to weigh things logically, rationally, when you can just sit with the mechanism of the way the mind operates and no longer get involved in the right, wrong, good, bad thing, that's when something begins to change. And you can change that. You have the power to change that. You can do it with your breath. Just sitting, watching your breath, inhale, exhale, slowly watching the breath. And if you watch the breath and you keep your attention on it, you will start to feel an ease coming out. You will feel more at ease. It's a revealing kind of thing. And then you will find your mind will come back at you in tumultuous ways for the simple fact, and the only reason it does is because it wants to get back to normal. And whatever that normal is, that is the way the human mind will go. So then you are going to have to learn how to live watching your breath. And it can be tricky, but you can do it. I can do it. You watch your breath constantly. Just watching. No matter what the words are in your head, the only thing that matters is the breath. In and out. In and out. Just watching. That alone will be very helpful to you. Master that, Carol, and then get back to me. Thank you for your beautiful question. Please forgive me. Namaste. We don't think we can control our worry because it's all emotional. We like emotion. There's other things that can help that, and I'll get into that. The next one comes from Julia. It's a beautiful name. She does not tell me where she lives. I just worry about everything all the time. What do I do, Julia? I know. I don't worry about everything all the time. I really don't. But I used to when I was younger. I would worry about this, that, and the other. And then one day, Julia, I broke the code, as it were. I had to make a decision. Everybody has to make some decisions in their life. And I made a few decisions in my life that were life-changing for me. And they were not changes that were logical or reasonable to my, what do I want to say, my career or my, how I was going to earn a living. Let's just put it out there. Because I knew that I would pay the price for this. You know, there's, when you're a minister, you have to indulge people. Sometimes I watch ministers and they talk to me and we chit-chat. And they have to indulge rich people to get them to give money and all that other crazy stuff. And I just decided one day, before I even was ordained, that I was not going to be the typical Unity minister where I was milking people or telling them how rich they were going to be and how happy they could be and how healthy they could be and wealthy and all of that and wise and all that other stuff. I wasn't going to tell them that. I was going to give them the truth and how to attain to it, how to have awakening, not knowledge. You can have knowledge about many different things in this world, but the awakening is what is important. If you don't awaken, and knowledge will not awaken you. Only direct experience will awaken you. If you are not willing to give yourself to the process of awakening, then you have a very difficult time with your life, and worrying will just ensue. So I had to make a decision, take a stance, and you're going to have to too, as to what you're going to do with your life. What are you going to do? What is it going to be dedicated towards? Now, a lot of people dedicate their life to their body and the comfort and the quote-unquote supposed security of their body to the whole idea of money and family. They want people to gather around them. What we secretly don't want to tell people is that we need little representations of ourselves in this world. We also need to have people care about us, so we're building a congregation by having families, and these congregate as a family, and then they're supposed to support us come hell or high water when the poop hits the fan. So there you are. That's what we do. And that's all biological, by the way, and that's kind of the way people are. I made a decision because I am an only child, and my mother and father died when I was very young. Well, not very young. I was 20 years old. That isn't very young. But they died then, and I had to move on my own, and I had to figure out what this was going to be about. First of all, you have to figure out who you are. Then once you figure out who you are, you make decisions based on that, then you have to drop who you think you are and find out you're not at all who you thought you were. That little paradox right there is one that keeps most people so confused, because everybody wants to come to some kind of conclusion about themselves and their life. This is a final conclusion. What I learned was not to come to conclusions about everything. That life is impermanence, not permanent. And there are certain things that happen to those who are willing to awaken past the ideas and the ideals of what they'd like to believe they are. When you are no longer interested in the personage of you, you will find out that you are more than a human being with a name attached to it. A biology, organs with names attached to it. You will find out that there is something much greater than just having a biological name attached to a biological body attached to, well, whatever, family, friends, job. Once you come to that, then the next decision becomes very important. Will you be true to yourself? Now, I'm not talking about the human self. You have to find out who is operating inside that body. You have to see it for what it is. Who is operating in there? Who makes the decision to come to conclusions about who and what we are? Who is the one that lives in that mechanism? Who's that little man behind, yes, the curtain? Who is that? Then go a little deeper once you maybe part the curtains and see who it is. Then where did it come from? Soon you begin to understand the meaning of no-thingness. You are not interested in the thing that you find. You're interested in understanding how it was developed, how it was manufactured, and how it is still manufacturing all sorts of beliefs and ideas and ideals that have nothing at all to do with the reality of still who you are and the process of who you are. Once you understand that, once you get involved in that, the door is open. Never to come to a conclusion about anything, Julia, and you won't worry as much. Watch your breath. Start to understand your thoughts. Don't talk to your thoughts. Don't have conversations with your thinking. That's the next step. Watching your breath, then not having conversations with your mind. Drop it. No matter what the mind tells you while you're washing the dishes or vacuuming or whatever it is you do, your little daily things that you might be doing, don't think. Just don't think. Thinking only causes difficulty. It is a barrier, not a bridge. So what should you be doing? Not having conversations, living in the solitude of your heart. Just listen without choosing thought. That's how you do it. I know. Sounds insane. Sounds like it can't be done. Sounds crazy, but it's not. It can be done. It is being done by lots of us in this world. Not the majority of us, but lots of us, and you can do it. It will kill the dualistic thinking that most of us have been involved in our life, and it will change a lot of the way you see things, not as a thought, but as an impression. And that's another Aspire radio program altogether. Thank you, Julia, for your beautiful question. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question from a man, Hal. He does not tell me where he lives either. What is it like to be... oh, boy. What is it like to be without worry like you, Hal? Hal, I have no idea what you're talking about. Greg sits in the background of my mind, and he is constantly dictating to me the same garbage you have in your mind about Hal. And it's all about not being enough, not being a good teacher, not being this, not being that, what I did here, what I did there, and that makes me this, that makes me that. All of that crazy stuff goes on inside of the old Gregory all the time. I don't listen to it. I don't engage it. I don't have conversations about it. And most of all, I don't come to conclusions about it. People come to conclusions about themselves. And when they do, they miss. What is the conclusion you come to about Hal? Who is this guy? How do you know you're right about him? How do you know he is who you think he is? How do you know? You don't. You only assume. And if you assume things about yourself, you're going to worry. This assumption tears away at the fiber of your entire life. If you really want to make headway in your spiritual development, you have to put some effort into it. You're not going to find answers in this world. If you look at science, it gives you hope and takes away hope. It says, this is what's happening, this is what's possible, this is what's likely. And you go through all of these things, even in Sapolsky's book, and he talks about it too. I love it how honest he is. You start to see all these things starting to happen inside you, and you miss. It's easy to be confused because the mind has become rigid. It has come to some kind of decision about itself and what it's going to do and how it's going to do it and what it's all about and how people are going to react to it. It assumes and makes all sorts of doctrines about who you are, what you are, who other people are, and it just gets crazy. And that's what causes us to worry. I just don't listen to it. I never have. I have put one thing ahead of everything. I have put, for the sake of love, everything I could. And even if that were to be rude, lewd, and crude to someone, even if it didn't sound like love to their ears, I practiced love. And if you practice love in the face of all that is going on in your life that is unkind, things that are uncomfortable, things that are untrue, you will find the way. I promise you. And the worry will still be there, but it'll be way in the background, like way in the back. I gotta go. Thank you, Hal, for being the guy in this whole thing, and I deeply appreciate it. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, there we are, another weekend. Hope this helped. You can contact me at greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire.org. I'd love to hear from you. Have a beautiful weekend. And once again, please forgive me, eh? Namaste.